Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome into another episode of RNIB Tech Talk, first heard right here on RNIB Connect Radio each Tuesday lunchtime at 1 p.m. UK, or you can catch us as a podcast. Just ask your smartphone or smart speaker for the latest episode of RNIB Tech Talk. Don't forget, of course, Tech Talk, it's your programme. We're always keen to hear from you. What's happening in your world of technology? Do get in contact in the usual way. It's by email, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, we're often told that journaling is good for our mental health. Hubert will be taking a look at the new Apple Journal app. We'll also be hearing about a new campaign to make some of our appliances and smart home tech more accessible. And we'll be having a quick roundup of some of the latest kitchen gadgets from the RNIB Products for Life store. That's all coming up this time on Tech Talk. Welcome in to our co-hosts, Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavalkovich. Gentlemen, how's it going?
All good, Dave. How are you?
Yeah, smashing. Yeah. So let's come to you first, Callum. What's grabbing your attention from the world of technology over the last 7 days?
Well, I've got something thanks to you, actually, Dave. I've just been playing with the Type-Ahead screen reader for the Mac. Well, I say screen reader, it's kind of a... I think of this as like a ChatGPT powered assistant. So the idea is you can type in certain commands. For example, if you've got an email with a link in there, you can just bring up this chat window and say something like, find the link in this email and click on it. And it will actually do that for you. I'm still getting to grips with it. I'm still trying to find out where you would put it to use, but it seems to work reasonably well. I mean, it's very early days for something like this, but I think this is where your smart assistants are going now. This like plain English, you know, just give it instructions as you normally would, and it goes off and just clicks on the buttons, waits for something to happen, and then does the next action. It's pretty incredible the way it works.
Well, why wouldn't you just press tab in that example? Are there any others?
Well, I think the way that the developer is going with this is that a lot of sites and a lot of apps tend to be inaccessible, or the buttons might not be labeled. So if you're having difficulty finding what you need, I think the long-term idea is that you can tell this app what you want to do, and it will analyze the screen, analyze where the voiceover cursor is, and do its best to do it for you if you're having issues or if it's inaccessible.
Okay, Type-Ahead, a kind of an AI-powered screen reader, as it's described for the Mac. Well, looking forward to hearing more about that. Hubert, what's grabbing your attention?
Talking of getting to grips with things, I have purchased, this is, again, thanks to you, Dave, you're responsible for two tech inventory bits. I have purchased the Arc X Ring, which I like the sound of when you mentioned it, and... the crucial word here is attempted to set it up. But unfortunately, I found at the moment the app is not the most accessible. So although I was able to connect my Ring to my phone, setting it up is a bit of a tricky process for the time being due to accessibility.
So just to remind everyone, this is a little joystick that you wear on your index finger that you can operate with your thumb. So one-handed operation for... you know, starting and stopping workouts or media playback. Have you got it to work at all, Hubert?
No, the only function I could do is just connect it to my phone. At the moment, nothing actually on it works, but I think that's because it needs setting up in some description in some way. But because of the app not being very accessible with trying different things, I haven't figured out really what I haven't done for it not to work at the moment.
That's so annoying. Well, look, do ping them an email and let them know. Maybe try and get some eyes on it as well. I'd be really keen to. Have you tried the you know, the screen detection mode in VoiceOver, where it can try and sort of do a bit of optical character recognition on the screen?
Yeah, I've tried a few things, and I've tried screen recognition, and it makes a little bit of a difference, but something still isn't happening, because, for example, you select the music mode, and I think you can customize which actions, which movement on the joystick does. So, you know, you can set, for example, that pressing on the joystick will press play, whereas pressing up or down will turn the volume up or down, respectively. And I think that's the part that needs setting up at the moment, and I can't seem to get around doing that.
Well, good luck. Keep us posted on that. Of course, the big news from the US on Friday last week, Vision Pro is now available to order, so you can make an appointment if you're in the US. So let us know what you think about that. The other news that grabbed my attention, haven't managed to get hands-on with this yet, is let's talk about Rufus. Anyone heard about Rufus from Amazon?
No, I don't think so.
So Rufus is going to help us buy more stuff, as if we need it, right?
Just what
we need. You'll be able to put natural questions into the search bar in your Amazon app, and the example they've given for is what's the difference between trail and road running shoes, and then this little kind of chat thing will pop up and it'll tell you, and it'll obviously guide you to spending lots of money. This was always going to happen, wasn't it?
Well, this was the aim back in the day with Alexa, wasn't it? This was the ultimate aim, was that it would give you like a voice controlled shopping experience. And obviously I know some people do use that, but I mean, it's all right for reordering. You know, you could just say reorder chocolates or reorder washing up liquid or something like that. That works all right. But if you want to buy something completely new, I mean, it does talk you through the search results, and it will say it costs this much, and is this the one you want? And you can say yes, or you can say no, move to the next one. But it's not a great experience. But yeah, that was when Lady A was released. That was its initial focus for Amazon, really, to get more people on Amazon in an easier way. So yeah, I can't say I'm surprised.
Well, and it works.
Yeah, it does.
I mean, it does work, yeah. Right? You know, I order more coffee, but I think the idea with Rufus is that you'll be able to ask him about, you know, different types of coffee machine, you know, so what's the difference between a bean to cup versus a, you know, a pod machine or whatever, and it'll kind of try and explain the differences to you. Well, it'll be interesting to see how that one shakes out. Let us know what's going on in your tech world. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Callum Hubert, stick around. It's another Tech Talk. I'm sure you're aware that RNIB's Products for Life store has a range of items that can make life easier for blind and partially sighted people. This can range from the very high-tech to the very low-tech. And here to share with us a few items that you might find useful in the kitchen, it's Louise Kenny. Welcome back to RNIB Connect Radio, Louise.
Thank you, Dave, and thank you for having me back.
Now, we've got three items, but this is really just the tip of the iceberg, isn't it? There are so many things there on the shop that people can use that will make their lives easier and simpler.
Yes, so the kitchen range would be one of my favourite ranges in the products that we would have. And just we've launched a video there with Marks and Spencer, so I thought I would take out three of the products that feature in that video to talk about today.
Yeah, and Sarah's in that video, does a fantastic job. What was she cooking in the video?
Oh, no, there's a question. She was making a dinner with mince. I remember that. Spaghetti, so yeah.
Yeah, you go, like a bolognese or something, maybe.
Yeah, something along those lines.
Something along those lines. And I think there was like a veggie version as well, if you don't do meat. So so look out for that on the social media channels, all the usual social media platforms. You can see that video with Sarah making the M&S meal with products from the RNIB store. So one of my favourites, let's start with the talking kitchen scales, because this has been a mainstay in our kitchen for years and years and years. And do you know, I don't even remember having to change the batteries, and we use this product every single day. So just talk, if you would, Louise. I believe the scales are now back in stock.
The scales are now back in stock, and just like yourself, we use them in our house faithfully every day. So there are people that would use the kitchen scales for measuring out food if they're a guide dog owner. In our house, we use them for measuring water for dissolving medication. So, you know, there are plenty of reasons for the kitchen scales, but yes, they are back in stock. They measure wet and dry ingredients, and they speak in a clear male English voice. But the scales can now announce the wet ingredients in fluids and ounces and pints as well as milliliters. But for customers who still like the option to measure by touch, we have the tactile measuring gauge, which is available to purchase separately from our online shop.
They've got a clear Perspex jug, I think it is.
Yes, so there's like two parts to the scales. So there's the removable, easy-to-see jug, which is see-through, and then bold text on it for the measurements. And then the base unit, as you said, it does operate on two AAA batteries. There's a large LCD display in the middle between two buttons. The first button would be the power on and off button, and then we have our metrics, so I can switch the scales on and let you have a little listen if you like.
Yeah, if you've got them to hand. Yeah, fantastic.
I do indeed, yep. Let's give it a go.
Power on.
And I'll just run you through the metrics just so you can hear them.
0 milliliter. Ounce, it is 0.1. It is 0.003 pints. Fluid ounce, gram.
There we go. So I just power them off.
Oh, I think, do you know, I think the ones you have there are a bit upgraded from ours. I'm sure ours only does, sort of grams and
milliliters and ounces. Mm. Yep. So that's the new feature with the pints, and then for the wet and wet ingredients as well. Yeah,
fluid ounces as well. Crikey. Mm-hmm. Well, there you go. And that jug then, so you've got an easy grip sort of handle.
Yeah, it's got a foam grip handle, so it's black. Mm. And it's obviously very, very easy to clean and very easy to store away. So for example, in our kitchen, for a lack of space, we can store it in two separate places. And I would use the jug for other things too, so it doesn't necessarily have to be stored with the scales.
Now, I am hopeless at pouring, right? And so you can pour straight from the jug. It's got a bit of a spout there. But, you know, the other thing that is a huge benefit as far as I'm concerned is the little lip that sticks out from the bottom edge of the jug so that you don't accidentally slide it off the scale.
Yes. So we do have that as well. And with the jug, you're correct for pouring. So I know Pancake Tuesday is just around the corner, so you can put all your ingredients for your pancake batter into the scales, into the measuring jug.
And they're just really compact. You can just sort of wipe it down with a damp cloth when you're finished, and easy to store away in a cupboard if you don't need it out on the...
Yeah, and if you're staying away anywhere, so for example, I explained at the start about how I would use these daily for measuring water for medication. So obviously when I go to my parents' house, I don't have a set of scales there. So I just take the base unit, if you like. I put them in my travel case and then just set a cup onto the scales, and I'm still able to weigh out the water for the medication.
Yeah, well, they definitely get used several times a day in this house for, you know, porridge in the morning, for measuring milk, getting the right amount of milk in the porridge. And, you know, so you just put the sachet of porridge into the bowl, right? So you stick the cereal bowl on the scale, zero it, you know, once you've got your sachet in, and then, you know, add the milk. And I think our sachet is like 180ml or something like that.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned, we also weigh the dog food. So we've got a retriever, you know, and their weight can fluctuate quite a bit. So quite specific instructions there. He's got to have, you know, a particular weight of food twice a day. So you can be accurate with that as well. So, yeah, I mean... You know, there are some products and you just think, really? But actually, I have to be honest, this is one of my favorite products that R&IB sells.
Me too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So you've got a couple of other things as well, slightly lower tech solutions. You've got something that's going to help us open some of those difficult to open jars.
Yeah, we have the jar opener. It's made from, it's latex free, it's non-toxic and non-sticky. So basically it's the shape of a dome and can just be set if you have a weakness in your arm or if you've just less strength in your arm maybe. It's really good just to give that a little bit of extra support for opening the jar of cranberry sauce or the jar of marmalade in the morning for your toast. It's just a little bit of extra support.
Well, and I think for anybody, right, because sometimes for whatever reason, jar lids can just be really tight, you know, and you've been there, you know, when you pass it around the table and go, would you have a go, you know, will you try and open it, you know, and I'm pretty sure we had that when we had our Christmas dinner and then out came the dome, you know, and you sort of put it over and I think in the end I used a sort of a combination of the dome and maybe a tea towel as well, you know.
Yeah.
Do it over the sink as well in case it comes off suddenly.
It is, if we've, just like yourself, it is a case of we've passed it around and tried to see who else can open it. But with the jar opener, if you do, as like I said, if you have arthritis or a weakness in your arm and you need that little bit of extra support, the dome-shaped jar opener is fantastic, just to give you that little bit of help.
Now, during my misspent youth, when I was a bachelor, if I ever wanted to get anything out of the oven on the very few occasions that I might have, you know, put a pizza in there or something, I would just kind of grab the tea towel. But that's potentially dangerous because, of course, you could touch the edge of the shelf or the oven. You could risk burning yourself. You've got a much better option.
Oh, tut tut for doing that, but yes, we do. We have oven gloves in two sizes available. So there's the medium length and then there's the full length. So with a dry heat environment, they're safe to use up to in an oven of up to 250 degrees. And with the full length gloves, it go right up to your elbow. So to give you that little bit of more space, if you like, for going into the back of the oven to pull this up. Now, if the tray's gone right to the back. But definitely a much safer option to be using rather than a tea towel.
100%. And those oven gloves, Louise, are they the kind where you can put like both hands in?
So they are the five finger ones.
Ah, okay.
It's not like the mitt where all the fingers are in one space. No, you've got separation of all five fingers in their own little compartment, like a pair of gloves.
Right. So you've got a little bit more sort of motor control with your fingers. So you could potentially, if you really needed to, I suppose, you could potentially lift something out of the air fryer.
Yes, you could. Yeah. Yeah, you could do that easily. Yeah.
So anything that's dry, anything that's up to 250.
150 degrees, yeah.
Okay, brilliant. So we've got the oven gloves available in two sizes. We've got the jar opener and, of course, our old favourite,
our fantastic kitchen
scales. The talking kitchen scales now back in stock. So where do we find all these kitchen products, Louise, and see what else you've got?
So for more information on the RNIB products, you can browse our online shop, which is shop.rnib.org.uk. If you are not online, you can also phone the RNIB helpline on 0303 123 9999. If you are living in Edinburgh, London or Belfast, you can also visit our Products for Life stores. So in Belfast and Edinburgh, the stores are open Tuesdays and Thursdays by appointment only. And in London, the store is open 5 days a week.
Louise Kenny from RNIB's Products for Life store. Thank you so much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you very much.
Thanks again to Louise Kenny from Products for Life guiding us through some of the items that we can use in the kitchen. But what if, like me, you're not a whiz in the kitchen and you'd prefer to go out for a meal? Well, of course, the first thing that you are confronted with is accessing the menu. And Hubert and Callum join me now to talk about some of the ways in which technology might help us with this task. Let's come to you first, Hubert. There's a couple of options, really.
There is. I mean, there's the simple one. You can ask someone at the restaurant. There's another one which I tend to do, and I'm currently planning for a weekend away. And what I like to tend to do, if it's accessible, which is always a caveat, is check the menu on the website when I'm selecting restaurants to kind of go, yeah, this is what I like, this is what I might fancy. That's certainly another option. You know, when you're in the restaurant, you can try using your phone to read the menu via the various apps that are available, whether it's Be My AI as part of Be My Eyes, whether you want to use an app like Seeing AI, you can try that as well. You've got quite a few options there, really. It just depends which one you feel more comfortable with. Or there is always, like I said, asking a member of staff if possible.
Callum, what about apps? There are a couple of dedicated, accessible menu apps available. Just talk us through the options there.
Yeah, there's a few. So there was an app recently which was about to be discontinued, and luckily it's still hanging around. They just announced that they've managed to secure some new contracts, I think. But there was an app in the US called Menus for All, which isn't available here in the UK yet, but it is across the US and Canada. And they use as far as I understand it, they use a subscription model, which has caused some interesting discussion online when this announcement about it potentially being discontinued was first announced. I think that's like $3 or $4 a month. It's interesting. I guess the discussion that it started off was, should we really be paying a subscription for that? We were talking about this off air, and again, Dave, you're doing well this week, because you put me onto another app called Good Food Talks, which I'd never heard of until you told me about it. And that's a free app, which I've just tried, and it looks good. There's quite a few places near me that seem to have it. It is a little bit limited, though, which is the only problem. So there's, I think near me there was Wetherspoons, Nando's, and TGI Fridays. Loads of those came up. But there are a lot of other restaurants near me that weren't listed on there. So, yeah, I mean, it looks good. The only problem with these dedicated apps is just getting the restaurants on board, I suppose.
Yeah, Good Food Talks, they seem to have got a few of the chains on there. Maybe not your local independent restaurant. And of course, the other option is a good old-fashioned Braille menu as well, which I guess would be my option. I don't really enjoy having somebody standing at the end of the table going, right, on the starters, we've got, you know. So, yeah.
It's funny you say that, because most of the time when I go out, it's me and my wife who, as many people will know by now, is sighted. And we've got a system that works. Like, she will read out she's got a rough idea of what I like and don't like. So she knows, for example, that salads, she can probably skip those. So we go off, like, she'll read the headings, you know, so she'll say, right, there's starters, there's classics, there's burgers, and there's grill, and there's this and that. And then I'll say, oh, okay, well, what's on the grill? What's on the pastas? You know, for example, and then she'll read those. And that works really well for us. But yeah, out and about with someone who I'm not as close with, I mean, I don't feel comfortable with staff, asking the staff, because they're busy. And then, like, for example, the only thing with checking online, which is the other thing that I always try and do, but it just takes away that spontaneity aspect. Like, for example, there's a leaving due at work in a couple of weeks, and the plan is that we're going to go out for a few drinks after work, and we know where we're going, and then there's a few of us that are going to go for a meal afterwards, but we don't really know where we're going yet. We're just going to kind of see where we can get in. So, I mean, that's going to be tricky, potentially, if their menu's not accessible or if they don't have Braille menus, because I just feel a little bit uncomfortable asking people.
Hubert, you mentioned using some of the OCR-type apps. My results with that have been a little bit mixed in a real-world situation. Lighting isn't always brilliant in restaurants. Getting the position of the phone above the menu, and then sometimes there are multiple pages, so you've got to kind of flip through and take a photo each time to try and find the bit that you want. I've almost given up, I think, on using OCR when out for a meal. It's either an app for me, the website, or if they've got a Braille menu, last resort, ask the people you're with.
Yeah, I have to say, I think the OCR apps is probably a last resort because of all the things you've mentioned, where, you know, it's difficult to get the right positioning and everything else, but also it's whether you can hear your phone in a busy restaurant. If you use an app, it's, you know, trying to hear that phone, especially if the restaurant is very crowded, that's not going to be quite easy, which is why I agree with Callum. The spontaneous aspect is removed if you check the menu online. But I almost find that's probably one of the few ways where you have the better chance of knowing what's available. I mean, when it comes to asking staff, it depends. Again, like Callum said, if you're comfortable with it, it's all about what works for you, I think, from the options that are available, which can be quite limited.
Let us know. Are you planning to go out for a meal? Maybe even a Valentine's Day meal? How will you access the menu, and will technology play a role? You can get in touch, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Hubert, Callum, thanks a lot.
So, as promised on the last episode of Tech Talk, when we had our conversation about the importance of journaling and why people could do it, why it's a good idea, and what sort of things people could journal about, I have the promised demo of Apple's new journal app, released with iOS 17.2 at the end of 2023. So what I'll do today is show you briefly what the journal app looks like. It's fairly simple. I think what I mentioned on last week's episode was that there are other journal apps out there. One that's quite common is Day One, which is a great app, but I find it almost does too much for a basic journal app. Well, from what I've seen so far here, this app seems to be quite nice because it allows you to journal about a few different things, but also it's quite simple. There's not too many things. I think so far, depending on how it develops, I think Apple got something quite good here. So we'll go into the app and show you what it looks like.
Journal. Journal. Alert. Face ID. Face ID authenticated. Compose. Journal.
So you've already heard one good feature, which, to be honest, most journaling apps for your smartphone or tablet tend to have, which is Face ID, or depending on your device, maybe Touch ID authentication. So it's all secure. No one can see your journal unless you authorize it, which is quite handy because you may be journaling about something not particularly important, just something fun. Maybe it's a fun project you're doing, or equally, you might be writing about quite sensitive issues and you don't really want anyone reading it who you have not authorized to read it. So that is quite handy, and I've enabled it partly because some of the things I write are private, partly because I just like to have it secured and like to explore all the features. So first you've got
journal heading.
Journal heading, title of the app. Then once you swipe to the right,
filter button.
You have the filter button, which is quite handy if you are looking for specific entries. So what you've got in effect on the screen at the moment, as you'll see in a minute, is your list of all of your entries in chronological order from the most recent going backwards. And yes, that's quite handy if you don't mind going through your list of entries. But if you are looking about specific entries, for example, entries that relate to the music you've played, or entries relating to your workouts, for example, or people you've spoken to, or maybe entries that are reflective entries about specific moments or something like that, you can use the filter button and only show the entries that you want to see. Next.
Thursday, the 25th of January, 2024, at 21.
So as you can tell, that is a date of my last entry, which was the 25th of January. So I'm in my list of entries, and what you will be given here is the date of the entry and the time, and it will read the text of the entry as well, hence why I silenced voiceover, because I did not want it to read the entry. But you now have your list of entries, and you can swipe through the entries and have a read of them briefly or change them.
Bookmark.
Because, for example, with quick actions with the rotor, I can swipe up or down through various custom actions. So I can bookmark this entry. So if there's a particular entry and I would like to have it bookmarked because I think it's quite important, I can then bookmark it. And when I tap the filter button, I can only show bookmarked entries. So, you know, entries that are of particular importance that I want to filter out from all the other entries, that feature is quite handy.
Edit.
I can edit my entry. So if I want to change something or add something, I can always do that.
Delete.
I can delete it.
Activate. Default.
And the default actions, I can activate it. Now, at the end of this list, there is a compose button, but an easier way to find it is at the bottom of the screen. If you touch around with your finger above the charging port,
compose button,
there you will find the compose button, and you can double tap on it.
Compose journal heading. New entry button.
So it puts you on a new entry button. Now, if you double tap that button, it will bring you up a simple text field, and you can write absolutely anything you want, whatever you want to journal about. But if you want to make your entry a bit more specific, you can do so if you swipe to the right.
Select a moment and write. Selected. Recommended. Button. One of two.
So if you want to allow this, the app will have access to various apps you use on your phone that allow it in order to pick moments that you may want to write about. So in my case, for example, this journal app can access my workouts and my activity stats, which if I want to write about a particular walk, for example, that I do with my guide dog, if something particular happened that I want to talk about, which I do quite often because I find it quite nice to journal about that. It has access to my music activity. So if I have a song that I listen to quite a bit for whatever reason, and I think it's quite an interesting thing to write about, I can do that. Or photos, if there's a particular photo I take and I really want to write about it, it can do that as well. And that's just to name a few things that it can find. But also, I believe other apps may be able to allow access for the journal app. But it's a fairly new app still, so I guess new things will come up with it as it develops.
Recent button, 2 of 2.
So you've heard previously the app say recommended, and now it says recent. And these are two little toggles that you can select. So recommended moments will be obviously the recommended moments in the app that it thinks you can write about or would be interesting. Or recent, which is chronologically your moments, because sometimes what you want to find is not going to be in your recommended list, but it might be in the recents list. So for example, I know I've done a walk today, but if it's not in my recommended list, I know for a fact it will be in my recents list if I want to write about it.
Private access to suggestions. Journal only has access to the suggestions you choose to write about. Button. Actions available.
So that is fairly self-explanatory, just a privacy statement, which, again, it's important to know about, and especially because journaling can be quite a private activity.
Songs on repeat. Friday, but 19th of January to Wednesday, but 24th of January. 5. Elements. Media.
So I'll stop it from talking here because it read out that I had songs on repeat between in a specific time period, and there was 5 songs that were particularly repeated. And if I let it carry on talking, it would say the word media 5 times and follow it by possible text says, and it will probably read out text that might be the song title or the artists. So that's where you are now in your list of moments that it thinks you could write about, and it's up to you whether you choose to write about them. Now, there's 2 ways you can write about one of these moments. You can double tap on one of these moments and do it, or you can swipe down with 1 finger for custom actions.
Write about this.
You can write about it.
Explore image.
You can explore image.
Activate default.
And you can activate. And if I swipe through, it will show me other types of things I can write about.
Portraits, over the years, 5, elements, photo asset.
So again, it reads out photos that I can write about. It doesn't really tell you what's in them, but you can, I guess, explore image and see what it finds, or alternatively, you can ask Sighted Assistance as to what photos the app has picked out that you can write about.
Reflection, look back on your recent moments. What's the best thing that happened to you this week? Button. Actions available.
You can also get reflection hints, so things that you might want to write about, so any particular highlight of the week maybe that you want to write about. Something's happened to you this week and you want to highlight it, maybe on a Sunday entry or on a Friday entry, whatever you choose.
Morning walk, 5 hours ago. Outdoor walk, 3.75 kilometers, 0 hours, 55 minutes and 54 seconds, 386 kcal. Actions available.
So it has shown me a morning walk I've done earlier today with my guide dog, if I wanted to write about that. So if something significant happened on the walk, you know, if a particular event happened, whether something good that my guide dog's done or whether something I want to note that was of concern that I need to keep an eye on, whatever you choose to write about, you can simply do that.
The 1st of July, 2018, 5, elements, photo asset.
So it's picked up a selection of photos from a particular date far back years ago. I think it was actually when I bought a new kind of waterfall for my garden, if I remember correctly. So again, it thinks, oh, it'd be good to write about that. Unfortunately, I find it a bit too late to write about something 5 years ago, but that is what you can do.
Afternoon walk, Tuesday, 2.
And you can go through a long list of these moments and pick one of them to write about. Once you have chosen to write about it, and double tap on it, it will bring up a text field and you can right about that moment, and then you would tap the done button in the top right corner, and that is it. That is simply how you add an entry. So as you can see, it's a fairly simple app. From the way it works to the way the interface is designed, there's not too many things there. It's fairly clean and simple, quick. So the journaling task doesn't take forever for you to find everything you want to journal about. In fact, it's quite easy. So that is the simplicity of it, which I like. I like the security of it, which is quite decent. I like the ability to authenticate with Face ID, because you never know what you can end up writing about, and you don't want people getting their hands on it. And the good thing is, it can sync across to other devices. I don't think there's a journal app on the iPad, because I've updated my iPad recently and it's not showing, but it might have hidden somewhere. So I'll have another look. But certainly, if it becomes available on all Apple devices, which it probably will eventually if it isn't already, then your entries will sync across to all your devices and you can access them wherever you like, because you can type the entries in various ways, whether you type on the on-screen keyboard, dictate them, or connect a Bluetooth keyboard, whichever way works for you, I'm sure it can be done. So yes, that is quite a quick but simple demonstration of Apple's Journal app. So let us know what you think of it. If you've tried it and you have any particular comments or even suggestions that I have not shown here, you can drop us an email, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That is techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Or if you wish to suggest alternative journal apps that you actually think, in my opinion, that app is better than the Apple's journal app, again, we want to hear from you as well. Any suggestions you've got, they are always welcome. But that is Apple's journal app.
Hubert Pavalkovich there with a demonstration of the new journal app. This is really a timely reminder of how much information our smartphones really do have about our whereabouts and our activities and what we get up to. I was looking at this, Hubert, and you went for a walk, or you were in this place for a bit, and what did you do there, and how did you feel about it? And I don't know, I found it a bit naggy, to be honest. So is there a way we can sort of dig into the settings and dial back some of this, because it all feels a bit creepy to me, if you're honest.
Yes, I mean, it's one of these things where if you're used to the way these kind of things work, you won't find it too surprising. But for someone who hasn't used this app before, for example, and you see what your phone actually picks up, yeah, it does give you a bit of a wake-up call, kind of like, oh, you can see all this. Now, you can, when it comes to the journal app, you can adjust these in the main phone settings and tapping on the journal app, or in the journal app settings itself. But when it comes to, in general, these things, you can also look at different settings, for example, for location services. You can look at what sort of permissions different apps have. So you can look at what apps have access to your location, and you can limit how they access location, whether they access it when the app is closed or only when you're using the app. Same goes for, you know, features such as microphone, your camera. So you can, to quite an extent, choose what the apps have access to and what permissions you give them, because, you know, it's not always comfortable when an app uses your microphone when you don't want it to. Most of the time it doesn't happen, I have to say, but if you don't feel comfortable, you can adjust quite a lot of these permissions through various settings. And the place to start is definitely the settings app on your smartphone. And if you look at the individual app settings there and the different permissions, you should be able to change at least to quite an extent as to what it can and can't access and when.
Callum Stoneman, Big Brother really is watching you in 2024.
Yeah, it's definitely worth digging into settings, and then privacy is the best place to start on iOS, at least. I think Android, it's similar, or it might be permissions or something like that, but it's something along the lines of privacy and permissions, and you can go in and see what it will probably surprise you how much, because you get these little prompts when you first install an app, you know, can this app can we access your location, can we access your photos, and you kind of allow or don't allow them as needed. But then when you actually go in there and you see just how many have access, or at least have asked for access, it is quite surprising. But I think just pay attention to those prompts. And for example, if you've got a GPS app and it says, can we use your location? Well, obviously, it needs your location to work. But if it's I don't know, a GPS app and it says, oh, can we access your photos? Just be wary of, well, hang on, why do you need that? You know, unless there's a reason. And that's one of the good things about iOS is that it can't access these things without at least asking you first. That's an Apple limitation there.
Yeah. I can't help wondering whether some of this is maybe even a little bit generational, our attitude towards privacy. I'm sure Ant Morse, who's been on Tech Talk previously, has said that, you know, some of the younger generations are willing to surrender some of this privacy in order to have the convenience that some of this technology affords us. Well, let us know. Have you managed to wrestle back control? Are you comfortable with the Journal app telling you where you've been and who you've seen and you didn't phone when you said you would? Let us know. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Callum, Hubert, thanks a lot. As blind and partially sighted people, there are many technologies that can facilitate greater access to our smart homes and smart appliances. However, your mileage may vary. What works this week might not work next week. Someone who is hoping to shine a light on this issue is Connor Scott Gardner, who has a background in social media and joins me now. Connor, welcome back to RNIB Connect Radio. Your project, My Accessible Home, just talk us through your objective with this.
So it's kind of a multifaceted project. It was really born out of my frustration at trying to buy new home appliances, whether that's looking at buying a new microwave, a new coffee maker, looking at access to my cooker. So many appliances these days have touchscreen controls and no accessibility features. So they're completely inaccessible if you're totally blind or even if you're partially sighted, because often the color contrast and text size and things are just not appropriate. Even with smart appliances, we obviously have the struggle of, is the app that pairs with them going to be accessible? Can you set them up yourself? And then not all blind people use smartphones. Not all blind people want to only be able to access their appliance through an app. So I got pretty frustrated about this and I realized it wasn't just an issue that blind people were facing. If we were dealing with it, then so were a lot of other disabled people, whether that's someone who has a mobility disability or has dexterity issues or someone with a learning disability who may find these really complicated appliances just too challenging to use. So I set up this campaign, which has several objectives. Firstly, to ascertain the extent of the problem, to understand what barriers are disabled people facing, to pull on existing research, but also to do some new research to find out what do the barriers look like in 2024. Then, based off this research, to make recommendations to manufacturers, to engage with manufacturers, so that hopefully they can get on board and develop more accessible products of their own accord, but to also collaborate with disability rights organisations which are doing this work, organisations like the European Disability Forum, organisations like the RNIB who have produced design standards for appliances and who do a lot of work in this area. And then to also push for legislative change. So looking at what actually can be embedded in law that might change this, because it's an ongoing problem. It's been a problem that has been growing in the last few years. And it's not a problem that, you know, we've only just started talking about. It's one that people have been talking about for a while, but nothing seems to be changing.
Tell me about some of the evidence for this being a growing problem. I control my dishwasher with my smart speaker. My air fryer and microwave have rotary dial controls that I can feel. And my washing machine manufacturer came along and installed a very nice braille panel on the front. I can feel that. So I've obviously done a little bit of research to figure out what's accessible for me, but obviously that's only my experience. You said there's a sense that this is a growing problem. Just tell us a bit more about that.
If you look back to 2012, there was a proposed piece of legislation by the National Federation for the Blind in the United States. And what they were proposing were actual accessibility requirements for manufacturers, where they had to meet certain accessibility requirements. Now, this legislation never came into force. It was never picked up. But they talked about kind of the growing problems at that stage and how things were moving to digital technology. So things like, let's say, a washing machine or a coffee maker that has a digital menu. And even if it's got physical buttons that maybe you press to go up and down, if the menu endlessly scrolls around and around, and when you switch your washing machine off, it doesn't go back to the beginning of the menu, you as a blind person maybe can't keep track at all of where you are on that menu. So they talked about things like that. And then there was some research done in around 2016 by Access World, which is associated with the American Foundation for the Blind. And they talked about different appliances and what accessibility features they had. Then when the European Accessibility Act was being proposed, the European Disability Forum did some research, and they actually talked about how disabled people overall are struggling with access to appliances. And that covers all disability groups, not just blind and partially sighted people. And their concern was that access to household appliances is not included in the European Accessibility Act, which is a fairly robust piece of legislation which is coming into force. It's also been in force since 2019, but with European law, businesses have kind of time to adapt to it, and they get given a certain amount of time to implement changes. But household appliances, unlike things like online banking and audiovisual content, are not included in the legislation. So it's an area that these disability groups are drawing attention to, but actually there's no backing to kind of force the hand of businesses.
Clearly, this isn't just about smart home appliances. It's about standalone appliances that may not be connected. As you say, those endless scrolling menus, lots of products have touch screens and no clear way to be used by somebody who is totally blind or even somebody who is partially sighted. You've obviously done plenty of reading, and you're collating some of the existing research in this area. But you mentioned at the beginning that you're looking to gather some new data as well. Tell us a bit more about that.
Yeah, I absolutely am. So at the moment, I'm conducting a survey called the My Accessible Home Survey. It's open for disabled people anywhere in the world to complete. And it's a fairly short survey. It shouldn't take you more than 10 to 15 minutes. And it asks several questions about your access to appliances. And it gives you plenty of opportunity to actually write longer answers should you wish to do so. It covers all kinds of areas. Firstly, from whether you've struggled accessing your current appliances, what kind of barriers you face, but also what sort of accessibility features would you want in an appliance? So it isn't just about the barriers, it's about what would increase your access to appliances. And then I take a look at the shopping experience. So how do disabled people know if an appliance is going to be accessible when they're looking to purchase it? Do manufacturers offer accessibility information? If they were going to offer it, what would people want that to look like? And then more broadly, when you're shopping, let's say in Currys or somewhere where you can buy appliances from lots of different manufacturers, do the people working in those shops know about accessibility? Have they been given training on that? And what kind of support are they able to offer to disabled customers? So it really goes through the whole journey from buying to owning these appliances, looking at all the potential barriers, but also what could be done to mitigate these. And I'm wanting to use that data to show the extent and the scope of the problem, but also to make meaningful recommendations that are based on the actual views of disabled people, rather than just what I think would be good, because I'm one blind person and I know what would work for me, but there are plenty of things that I don't know about, and that if I'm going to make really meaningful recommendations, then I need that information.
Who are you hoping to reach with the survey?
Really, as many people as possible. It is targeted at disabled people rather than friends and family members at the moment. Now, I do recognise that family members will have, in particular, valuable contributions to make. And so I will be opening up opportunities going forward for them to share kind of experiences around, you know, adapting homes and purchasing technology that they know their disabled family member will be able to use. But right now I'm looking for the experiences to be shared by disabled people, and really of any age group, of any kind of disability, of any impairment, that's, you know, that you can share kind of what disability you have on the survey, so I can segment some of the recommendations as well. But it isn't just restricted to one group of people.
Is it just in the UK, or is this an international survey?
So it's an international survey, because what I'm not doing is asking about specific shops, you know, that, or specific websites that are UK only. I'm asking for general experiences using appliances and going into shops and looking for information from manufacturers. And a lot of these experiences are universal, in that if someone's struggling with a touchscreen, they're going to struggle with a touchscreen irrespective of what country they're in. So it's really to gather some kind of wider themes around this at the moment. And then what I will look to do in future is narrow that down to smaller groups of people, whether that's by country or by disability type. And I'll probably look at hosting some kind of more group discussions and webinars and things like that, where these issues can be broken down. But at the moment, I'm looking to gather kind of a wider amount of data.
You've got a deadline. When do you want people to fill this in by?
By Sunday, the 11th of February. And the reasoning for that is the campaign will officially launch on the 4th of March. So between the 11th of February and the 4th of March, I need to evaluate the survey responses. I need to write a report based on the survey responses and also my initial research as well. And then I need to send that press release and report out to various different organisations in time for the launch on the 4th of March. So there's quite a lot to do in that time, which is why the deadline's been set for then.
Sure. Well, I will ask you for a link at the end where anyone hearing this before the 11th of February can get their views heard, but you alluded to it slightly there. What's going to happen with the information that we share? You're writing a report, you're going to do a press release. Who are you going to reach with that?
I have several groups of people I want to reach. Firstly, manufacturers. The ideal outcome of this would be that manufacturers are terribly surprised by the results and they say, oh, we really want to change things. You know, because what you don't want to do is have to force people to change. You want people to make changes because A, they know it's the right thing to do, and B, they recognise it will benefit them, because disabled people have a lot of spending power, and so they can capitalise on that, which unfortunately is what is likely to drive their engagement. There are some manufacturers who have already taken steps towards including accessibility features in their products. I'm hoping to engage with them in what I believe will be a productive and meaningful way, and get some kind of buy-in from the manufacturers who are already showing interest. I know this is unlikely to be all manufacturers, so I'll also be reaching out to policymakers, so local MPs, and that will be a part of the project where I will definitely be getting other people's involvement in that. I'll be producing some letters which you can customize and send to your MP. I want to host some discussions, some online events, and invite policymakers. I also want to host some educational events and invite people who are doing work around universal design and inclusive design, and, you know, host events around what does inclusive design look like. So there's an educational aspect to this too. So I think there are lots of different avenues I want to explore with this research, and hopefully, you know, it will result in some meaningful change.
Fantastic stuff, Connor. We'll be very interested to follow this one very closely. Do keep us posted. How can listeners get involved? And obviously, if we're hearing this before that deadline, how do we find your survey?
The easiest way, I think, for most people to find it will be to go to catchthesewords.com. That is my personal website and blog. On the menu of that website, you will find a page called My Accessible Home. And that is the landing page for the campaign. It gives you lots of information about the campaign. And the survey link is on there as well. For anyone who does follow me on social media, you can find my public Facebook page is under Connor Scott Gardner. And then my Twitter handle is Connor Scott G. Twitter does not let me put my full name in it. It's too long. And so you can go to either of those profiles and find the link. I've also posted it over on LinkedIn. So if you're a LinkedIn user, you can search for me by name and find me over there. So there's quite a few ways that you can find this campaign as well.
My Accessible Home, a campaign that you can find over at catchthesewords.com. Connor Scott Gardner, thank you so much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thanks for having me.
That's it for another Tech Talk. Thank you so much for your company. Don't forget, of course, we're always keen to hear from you. If there's something you'd like us to chat about on the show or something you'd like us to investigate, then you can drop us a line, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. But from myself, Dave Williams, Callum Stoneman and Hubert Pavalkovich, bye for now.
Bye-bye. See you next week.
Goodbye.
Ta-ra.